happy to see all of you here. I thought the other session sounded really interesting, and I was like, wait, no one's going to come to mine now. Because I wasn't sure how many of you are actually responsible for promoting your faculty. So if I could see a show of hands, how many of you are responsible for promoting your faculty? Okay, that's probably why you're here. Great. Good. Then we're all on the same page, and I'm speaking to the right audience, which, as everyone in this room knows, that when it comes to social media, if you don't know who your audience is, then you can't really be projecting the right message, right? So the reason that I call this Beyond the Selfie is because I don't know about your faculty, but my faculty, most of them think that this is what self-promotion is. They feel, I have a handful of good self-promoters, and the rest of them feel like talking about themselves makes them very uncomfortable. And this is what they think everyone thinks of them if they are. And so convincing them why self-promotion is important is like half the battle, right? And does it really play a role in hiring, in tenure, and promotion decisions? I think that they, they're confused about that. So the second question is, do the same self-promotion techniques work equally well for professors before or after tenure, and why or why not? So going back to the first one, how many of you would say to your professors that this is important? And does anybody want to offer up why they think that it could be important to get them hired or maybe get them promoted? Right, so coverage begets coverage, right? It's like, so if they're not out there on social media, then it's going to be a lot more difficult for reporters to find them. Did you want?
That was the same thing.
Okay. Yeah, that's a really good point. So these are all reasons that you can give to your professors. Going to the, does the same self-promotion techniques work before or after tenure? And why or why not? Why do you think I have this question up there? It's because we often find that who's doing all of the publishing? Who's just eager to get all their stuff out there? It's the people before they have tenure, right? Everyone who's trying to get tenure. And it's not to say that after they get tenure, they don't do a lot of research and writing, because they do. But the really eager professors are the ones who are trying to get tenure, or perhaps they're a visiting professor at your institution, and they're there, you know, but they're going to be doing job talks, and they're trying to get their papers, et cetera, promoted so that they can be attractive to another institution. And so, they definitely need to be getting their stuff out there more. On the other hand, and the reason I have this up there is, what techniques work best? If you are a professor with tenure, as we all know, whether or not you should, you can pretty much say anything that you want to, and without retribution. You may get retribution from some places, but you're still going to be able to keep your job. If you don't have tenure, then you're probably less likely to be spouting off your political views on maybe Facebook, for example. Perhaps they should stick to Twitter and to just areas of their research, but staying away from personal opinions about certain politicians, et cetera, would be best. So success is one of life's accomplishments, but recognition is another. And one of the things I tell professors is that, because my professors, for the most part, are very social media adverse, okay? The younger ones are more willing to adopt it, but, I would say that maybe I have a quarter of my professors who are really willing to embrace social media. And so where I have to start with them is to say, look, this isn't just about you, and it's not just about going back to this. Okay, so if it'll come back, the success part. So let's say they, have a highly cited paper published, right? And what I have to convince them is that it's not just about the recognition their success is going to get for them. It's the recognition that it's going to get for the community and for the school, which is what I care about, right? I mean, I care about them, but I also mostly care about the school. And then them. And so what I'm trying to tell them is that this is not just about them. It's not all about you. So that their ideas can lead to change, that can help the school become a thought leader or known as a thought leader. You know, and this goes to university funding, which was brought up a minute ago. It can help us attract new faculty. It can help us get new students and perhaps external donors, and it helps us in the rankings. And, you know, of course, with PR, other academic collaborations, university funding. And anyway, but there comes a time when making a point kind of becomes pointless, right? So don't want to beat a dead horse. So again, some professors feel uncomfortable promoting themselves, and how do you balance humility with their self-promotion? I don't like this meme because there's a typo in it, and I'll give anyone a dollar if they want to tell me what the typo is, but I'm going to go away really fast, so maybe you can't find it. but anyway, you know, it's all in how you do it. That is the key to self-promotion. And so going back to what some of you pointed out earlier, and rightly so, is first they have to find you. And what I tell them is social media is the best place for, you know, the media, other thought leaders, other academics. That's how they're going to find them. And unfortunately, there's still this idea out there among my faculty members, at least, that, you know, oh, Twitter, it's stupid. It's just what, you know, people talking about what they had for breakfast. I don't know. I mean, that was like, what? When did Twitter come out? Thank you. Yeah, he just told us a little while ago. So like 10 years ago, that's what people did on Twitter. You know, it's not, that's not what Twitter is all about now. And I think that this argument is a little less hard to swallow now that we have somebody in the White House who tweets everything, although it kind of can be bad as well, because then they still kind of think this, right? They think of it as a Dear Diary. But one of the other things I talk to them about is that it's not, you know, about vanity stats. It's not the professor who gets the most followers who wins at the end of the day, right? It's about having the right kind of followers. And then I tell them that, you know, what they really need to focus on is getting the right followers and, you know, getting their expertise out there. Maybe they can have pithy insights or just sharing, you know, their stance on a current issue, as long as it's not politics, so we're not going to go there. But one thing that I really discourage, do any of you right now, are any of you asked to maintain a ghost account for, say, your dean? How's that going for you? Right, exactly. Which is why I wrote in all caps, I do not recommend this practice. I've had several deans who wanted me to do a ghost Twitter account for them, and I just said no. Because, and I know it's hard to tell your dean no, it's hard to tell anybody in authority no, but when I explain to them why that's not the purpose of it, then they understood. And so I just worked with them on helping them find their authentic voice. You know, and I'm still working with my current dean right now because she says, well, I don't know what to tweet about. And I'm like, look, if you see an interesting article about legal education, you can retweet that. If one of the other law school deans out there, you know, tweets some interesting statistic about legal education. And the reason I keep focusing on this is because she's really trying to promote herself as a thought leader in legal education. Or if there's something about family law, which is her expertise, you know, I'm like, just start out by listening, which is what we all know, and, you know, encouraging them to follow like people so that they can get an idea of what everyone else is tweeting about. And then it will come naturally to them. But there is some hand-holding involved, but I highly recommend holding their hand, not being their ghost tweeter, because that account is never going to flourish. And ultimately, at the end of the day, it's going to die a, you know, slow death, or hopefully a fast death, because no one's going to follow it because it's not authentic. Even if you are scheduling posts, it's still going to feel, I think it's going to have far too much of a marketing feel to it than, you know, what Twitter's supposed to be. And that is a conversation with other people. And it's also, I tell my faculty, a way to build relationships with the media. And I'll get into that a little bit more. So here is my poster child for Twitter. As far as my faculty go, I actually am fortunate. I have, like I said, probably about, I have a little over 50 faculty members, and I would say a quarter of them, about 20 to 25, are active on Twitter. Some are more active than others. Tanya really gets it. She has, I realize, like, not this huge amount of followers. You know, it's getting close to 500, but the people who follow her are the right people. Her specialties are, as you might guess, death, cemeteries. She says on here, she also writes about music. She got into the whole cemetery law thing, though, because she's actually a real estate and property law expert. And that's what led her into this. And it turns out she is the authoritative figure on cemetery law in the country. She wrote the book about it, and the only one, too. So anyway, so that puts her in this really unique place. But here, I picked that she, so first of all, she's savvy enough to pin her tweet at the top. And the reason that she pinned this is because, and I'm going to tell you more about the conversation in a minute, but this was an article that she wrote for the conversation. She was kind of on fire this week. She was on this podcast at Rhodes Now, and then she had an article on The Conversation. She actually had another article that was on the front page of the Carolina Journal this week, all tied to cemeteries and funeral law. And why? Because it's Halloween, right? So that was really good timing. We planned that. It worked out well. But instead of, you know, having these great media hits and opportunities and them just kind of sitting out there, she's really promoting herself. And most importantly, please note that it says at WFU Law School. Now, she forgot the dot in front of the at, but I'm going to let that go. Because she knows that she needs to tweet at us as well, so that, not that, you know, I'm probably going to see this because I follow her, but just in case. My only criticism at all is that she didn't use our hashtag, but, you know, I'll let that go. She did it all well. So I'll use the hashtag when I retweet it, and we'll all be happy. So it's all in how you do it. Sorry. So help them find you. Say something worthwhile. These are just a number of journalists who have given advice to, this is their advice to faculty members. They're saying, you know, say something worthwhile. Be provocative, be useful, and that's really important, okay? Include data. And so if you have professors who have interesting data, you know, economics professors, as you were saying, anybody that has like a cool report with any kind of data out there that is new, I mean, you know, get that data out there. Tweet it at reporters who are covering this issue. You know, also, if you don't have a professor, or say a reporter, you know, coach your professors that if a reporter calls them with a question that they can't answer, make sure that you know somebody that could answer it for them, or tell them, say, hey, I can't answer this question, but my colleague over at Temple is an expert on this. Here's his or her contact information. Because being useful and being helpful to a journalist is going to earn you huge points. And so the next time they need to call you in, you know, for a quote, or they're looking for somebody to quote, they're going to remember, hey, that person really helped me and they couldn't help me with this, but I'm going to try them again. And this is, I'm sure, obvious to everybody in the room. By the way, speed counts. So I don't know how many professors say, hey, I want to be in the media. And then you say, hey, I have a reporter that needs to talk to you right now. And they say, oh, yeah, well, I'm teaching class. And then I've got to go do this. And I got to pick my kids up from school. And, you know, no. I mean, if they, class is one thing. If they're teaching class, that's fine. But anything that isn't teaching class unless their house is on fire, they need to take a minute and talk to the media unless they're just really not comfortable with the subject, and then they shouldn't be talking to them anyway. So these are just, you know, TV is, as we all know, is a whole kind of different animal. And frankly, I have really kind of just trained my professors to, like, if it's a major media outlet, yes, we can try to work around their schedules. If it is the local TV station and they're going to have to, you know, get up at 4 a.m. to go in and talk for 2 minutes on something, I've let them say, you know, I'm going to pass on this one. I mean, I don't know how everybody else feels about that, but I feel like I have to pick my battles. And frankly, that two-minute spot at 5 a.m. on the local news isn't going to buy me what CNN's going to buy me. So I would much rather them take the time to talk to a major media outlet than a local news station, because you don't want them to get burned out, and you know, you pick your battles. So what are the most effective non-traditional ways to promote a professor's profile and work? And this is where I think it gets really interesting. And how many of you know about The Conversation? Or is anyone using The Conversation? Okay, Dan, go up again. Okay, so just a handful, great. So for the people that are already familiar with Conversation, I apologize, but I do want you to all understand that basically it's relatively new. Dan, you might know when it started, a couple years ago?
Years.
Yeah, something like that. But it's really just starting now to kind of catch on. And Tanya, who I had up there on Twitter, and these slides are all going to be available. So I see somebody taking a picture, but Brianna's going to have these up online. I think they're online now, but mine's going to get re-uploaded. What it is you have to sign up, and I've got a slide later, that any academic, you have to be an academic with an institution, can sign on to become an author. And what it is you work with journalists, you work with an editor to write about a subject. And when you, so they send out queries every day, and then, you know, you in your role can shoot the queries to professors that it would fit their area of expertise, and then see if they are interested in it. Then they write to the editor, and then you kind of step out of it. And then you cross your fingers and hope that it all works out. With Tanya's article, and actually I'll go back to that slide really quick so you can... You want to see. So it was life after death. And I just got these stats from her, which is why I don't have a slide on it, but I wanted to share it with you guys. So this article was posted on Friday. And on Monday morning, she sent me the stats. There had been 14,300 readers, 34 tweets, 2,400 shares, and that was just on the Conversation stuff, but the LA Times picked it up. Okay, here's these other stats. So Business Insider, which is the after Huffington Post, and this just is embarrassing, TMZ, Business Insider is the third most read blog. I always hate to say this, like TMZ is the second most read blog. Business Insider is the third most read blog in the country, though. And there were almost 3,700 views on there. Says RepubHub, 700, I don't know, Patch. Lee Enterprises newspapers picked it up. I was really excited by the New York Times pickup. I mean, sorry, the LA Times pickup. And it was actually, it ran on the LA Times site. So if you're looking for, it's some work on the professor's part. That's going to be the caveat that I give you, that you have to have professors who are willing to do the work and put in the work. But if you can convince them of it, so go on conversation.com, check it out. You can sign up to get the email queries from their editors. And like I said, they send them out like, you know, once a day, sometimes twice a day. And it's really, it's definitely worth it if you can get your professors to do it. So that is, that's one of, I'm sorry, I went the wrong way. That's one of my favorite non-traditional ways to get them out there. The next one is to have them blog. And I don't know how many of them you have blogging. I have a lot of my professors blogging on Huffington Post. The reason that we started doing it was because a few years ago, well, even like up until about last year, you know, when you were a Huffington Post blogger, sometimes your posts would get on the homepage of the Huffington Post. And then when Ariana left, they changed the format. They also changed editors. And so now everyone is a contributor and it kind of gets buried. But there still are opportunities. If a post does well, the editors will boost it and it will become a featured post. And then it might get on the front of a section. And so I would still recommend that it's worth doing. So if you have professors who are, so Tanya is a Huffington Post blogger, but, you know, full disclosure, she has a funeral log blog that she started, and so she's using Huffington Post as a platform to push people to her blog, which is what I recommended to her, because if you have anybody out there who's blogging and they don't have a lot of followers, Huffington Post is a really good way, like, they can go, they can post even, like, the first couple paragraphs and say, read more. You know, on funeral log blog, whatever. So any of those types of mainstream blogs like that that you can get on. There's also subject-specific blogs. I work at a law school, so I'm using law ones, but profs blogs, tort law blogs. I mean, there, like I said, she has a funeral log blog. I mean, there is a blog out there, I think, for every subject, really. You just got to find it. And then helping your faculty member get in touch with that blogger, or, you know, like I said, I have 50-some faculty members. There's one of me. So what I do is I have taken basically this presentation and given it to my faculty. You are all welcome to do the same thing. It's a good way to try to just, you know, kill a whole bunch of birds with one stone. And what I always tell them is that they can help me help them. And this is the way, right? The other thing is podcasts. And I've had a lot of professors on a lot of different podcasts. Those are another great way to get them out there. But again, they need to, when they do this, well, they need to share it, not get to that. There's other things, you know, if they write a book, make sure that there's a reception at your campus library. Other speaking opportunities on campus, on other campuses, at, you know, Barnes & Noble, if it's that type of book that would be popular. Identify journals in other disciplines. They can rework some scholarly articles for non-academic audiences, say a trade journal or a popular journal or magazine. You know, as we've kind of been hearing all day, there's so many different platforms out there to get the word out now. You can find alternative places. It's just making sure that once they've been placed in that alternative place, that you're using social media to get the word out. Because just because somebody writes a blog doesn't mean that anyone's ever going to read it if you don't push them to it. It's the same, you know, philosophy we use to use social media to push people to our websites, right? So, you know, professional groups, conferences like this, seminars, and then op-eds. I really try to encourage my professors not to just go off and write an op-ed and then ask me to place it, because that is probably the worst thing they can do, because I don't want them to feel like they have wasted their time. And as we all know, print media is, you know, really shrinking, and so the actual printed page. There's not a lot of opportunity there. And they get so many inquiries that it's, unless they have a relationship, and I'm going to get into that a little bit more, then that might be an opportunity, but I usually don't suggest that too much. Two other ways to use social media. How many of you have referred your professors to use LinkedIn Pulse? Great, good. I see a few hands. If you're not doing this, I suggest that you go back to your faculty and suggest that everybody, if they're on LinkedIn, they use LinkedIn Pulse.
What about Medium?
Medium is also good. Yeah. I don't have a lot of people using that, but that's another good one. Yes, absolutely. I should have made a slide for that. I just don't have a lot of people using it, so that's why. But LinkedIn Pulse it gives you the opportunity to, anything that they're already writing, they can put an abstract up for, like a scholarly piece or whatever, and they can get comments on it. I know everyone thinks that LinkedIn, I don't know what everybody thinks about LinkedIn, honestly. It's like, a lot of people still have this attitude that LinkedIn is just out there if you want to find a job. I've never looked at it that way. I was an early adopter of LinkedIn, and as Dan showed earlier, it's one of the first social media out there. They've done, they're going through a lot of different iterations. Where now it looks a little bit more like Facebook, and they have made sharing and images and stuff a lot easier, but I have more connections on LinkedIn than any other social platform. And when I really want to get something out there, that's the group that, if it's the right audience for it, that's the group that I'm going to get it out there to. We have more people in our LinkedIn group for the law school than any of our other social media except for Twitter. I think we have as many followers on LinkedIn as we do for our university page as we do on Twitter. And so it's still a really viable social medium that I think sometimes gets lost. And keeping in mind, again, relationships, and if you want to build relationships with journalists, this is a really good way to do it, because a lot of times if the only access you have to a journalist is their Twitter account, their Twitter feed, and I highly recommend investing in a paid version. It doesn't cost that much per year of LinkedIn, because if they don't have their email on there, you can send them a message through the email, and I get a good response for it. So again, it's another place to publish. Google Scholar. I quizzed my faculty a few months ago, and I said, how many of you, when's the last time you updated your Google Scholar account, and do you know what 90% of them said? What's a Google Scholar account? So, or profile, and I was like, well, let's start there. Go find your Google Scholar profile, and, make sure that the data is up to date, and add missing publications, and I just explained to them that By updating their Google Scholar profile, they will also improve their Googleability. And I'm not sure Webster's is using that as a word yet, but I think it is. So they can, it helps them stay up to date with their colleagues as well. So just make sure that they're familiar with this. Thanks. I'm getting the 10-minute sign. Okay. I'm sure the stats way out of date by now, but because this is from last summer. But just know that most of the social media access that's going on out there is through mobile, and keep that in mind when you're thinking about how you're presenting different things on your social, right, for your professors. So what's the biggest mistakes professors make when attempting to promote themselves and their work? I think the one that I see over and over again is when they're always trying to turn the conversation back to me. So instead of actually trying to build relationships and you know, sharing their colleague's work or different things like that, it's the only time they ever post is when they write something, when they're quoted in the media, when it's all about them, right? So, since we're running out of time, I just think it's safe to say we all know that you should not constantly turn the conversation back to you, and this is a whole example of that, so we don't have to do that. What overarching advice would you provide your professors? So here's the nitty-gritty. If you're going to take away anything, I think take away this. They really need to rely on us as their advocates, right? Whoops, sorry, shouldn't have done that. Know the media outlets out there that are covering their particular area of expertise, their subject, and the reporters. You need to follow those reporters and those publications on social media and get to, you know, start relationships with them. And I don't mean like, you know, they have to go out and buy them coffee. I just mean that they need to, you know, send them a tweet about an interesting development in their field that isn't always about them. But, and, you know, this they can do by reinforcing their appeal as a useful source. And, you know, also though, when there is something that they think a reporter would be interested in, or you think a reporter would be interested in, that's once that relationship is established, then you can go in and say, hey, you know, this professor's particular research, I see you've been writing about it. They just wrote a new paper on it, or they found some new data, you know, so pitch to what they care about. And then now that you've gotten a media mention, or you had a article in the conversation, or you know, just making sure that not just you, it is not just your job to circulate that post, right? I mean, to circulate the media. It's like if you can work together, it will expand the reach just exponentially. And then also because I'm at a graduate school, I have the university help me, and vice versa. If you're a university and you've got, you know, different graduate schools, reach out to them to help you spread the word about things that you have as well. I mean, we're all in this together. So I also try really hard to tweet about other schools, professors, you know, like I said, again, it's going to be law schools for the most part, but if there's something interesting, you know, going on, some research at UNC, for example, or at Duke, and it might have something to do with the law, but it's not necessarily a law professor, I'm going to share that. Or if Duke Law, one of their professors, has something that relates to us, you know, we're going to share that as well. So it's not just about the professors, it's also about you and how you represent your institution. I think it's really important that we all help each other, right? What's the old adage, like, rising tides raise all ships? You know, I think we can all help each other. So in a time when maybe all we need is a little more kindness, I think it's a great practice. So other online communications, like we have an e-newsletter that we send out to everyone inside the school internally, but we also send it out to our alumni. So if we have some good media placements, or a professor has some new research or something that's been getting some buzz, you know, we'll put it in there as well. Of course, we post everything on our website, and then using the university's news, if you are in a graduate school like I am, or vice versa, if it's the main university and one of the graduate schools can help you get the word out about something that's relatable, then by all means, use them. So, best resources, let's go back to the conversation. I mentioned this already. So, there's the link to become an author, and then Medium. And do you want to talk about Medium for a second? Do you just want to share it with them? Like, right. That, and I think that's part of it. So, I think one of the reasons that I'm not that familiar with it is because it is more of an entrepreneurial, like you said, like a tech thing. And while I have a few law professors that fall kind of into that field, it's not really something that they can all use, but by all means, check it out. Anyway, so that after all this, so why do you have to write it? Why are they asking you to write it instead of them just writing it? I'm playing devil's advocate. I'm throwing it out there. Like,
in
so,
time, lack of
Okay. And how important is it to you that this article be written?
It's important because we want to use it for rankings.
Okay. And I asked all those questions because that's what matters. Like, ultimately, what's the goal of the article, right? If the article is that important to you, then I would interview them and not necessarily ghostwrite it. I would just write it as an article. If you feel really strongly that it has to come from them, I mean, where are you trying to place it?
We're trying to place it on our own personal blog. We haven't branched out into the other sources.
But you want it to look like they wrote it?
Yes.
And that's important. Why?
Because they're known all over the world.
Got it. Okay. I think maybe in that case, if you have the time, I think my issue is that I really would be very afraid to open that Pandora's box, because for me, then all my professor would be like, oh, well, you do this for me, and you do it for me, and, you know, and I'd just be like, no. So.
And it's not as far.
Right. I mean, so are you going to give it to them, and then maybe they'll add their voice to it, or you just kind of, or... Okay.
They always give a final editing. But
right.
They don't reshare that content then.
They don't reshare the content that you provide, but it's going on your website.
Mm-hmm.
So you can reshare it.
Yes, and we do.
But, oh, you're saying they don't reshare it. So even though, like, this person might have, like, a million followers,
yeah,
they're not resharing your content.
Mm-hmm. That they are supposedly writing.
Yeah. I think I would sit down and have a long talk with that professor, and possibly with the dean or the academic dean in the room. at least start that conversation, because I think if you kind of broach it like this, what we've been talking about, how it improves, it's not just for them. I don't know how much they care about your school. But if they care even a little bit, then, you know, if you can explain that it's really important for the university and for prospective students and donors who pay your salary. I mean, I think if you can maybe let them understand that it's beyond them and why it's so important. But so if they're not sharing it, are they sharing other things? So then I would just ask them. I really would. I would have that conversation. I would just say, hey, why are you not sharing our stuff? What can we do to entice you to share our stuff? Is it that you don't like how it's written? Perhaps you would like to write it instead. And then, you know, you'll feel like it's more in your voice, and then maybe you'll share it. But I really do. It sounds like to me that's like just a one-on-one conversation that you need to have. I mean, you know, I've tried to sit down with my faculty members who have expressed any interest in promotion and just have those conversations with them that say, look, you know, what's your level of comfort for tweeting? Or, you know, I have some professors, they will never tweet. I know that, and it's fine. You know, if they don't want to, I don't want them to be. And that's one of the reasons that no ghost accounts. I'm just like, even if somebody thinks they want one, I'm, you know, and I would only do it for a dean. And even then, like I said, I have basically told them no. So there's several schools of thought on that. I have some professors who have personal accounts versus professional accounts. And, you know, I really think it's up to the professor. As long as the things on their personal accounts aren't very political or aren't, you know, where they're going to, which we've run into, I'm sure you all have too, but... where they're, you know, upsetting alumni or whatever. I think that's just a personal decision. I don't recommend it, partly because I think it makes the business account feel very inauthentic. But, you know, it's really up to them. If they'll do it and they're more comfortable, then I would say by all means at least let them try it. And then they may see as time goes on that it's better to just merge those two accounts. And I think they should put their work on Twitter. I mean, they can talk about their work on Facebook, but I wouldn't use Facebook as their professional medium to get the word out about them. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, I see Brianna's like, because the next thing starts now. Okay.
But Lisa, I'm anyway. Sure you can take some questions
off
stage.
Yeah, absolutely. Man. Yeah, I'll be around. So just feel free to come talk to me. Thank you all.
Thanks.